This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space! And I'm about to die!
We need an opening.
Found one!
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace! Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
This is Joe Tavano from RetroZap.com and Brews and Blasters, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Vision of Hope, the 10th episode in Season 1. Joining us today on Rebels Reactions is Joe Tavano of the website RetroZap and the podcast Brews and Blasters. Joe covers narrative art in its many forms, and we are happy to have him join us for a cup of coffee. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going wonderfully. We are so happy to have you on and all the talented things you're doing. Your blog has been so incredibly popular, your article on Padme and then Luke and his lightsaber. And ironically, Corey texted me today and he said, check out this article. This is awesome. And I wrote back, guess it's going to be on Rebels Reactions tonight.
Yeah. Good news.
So that was fun. A fun little fan moment for us. So go ahead and tell us, if you would, about RetroZap and Brews and Blasters and what's going on both of those respective mediums.
Oh, thank you so much. First of all, I really can't thank you enough for all the kind words. It's really been kind of an amazing week. Yeah, RetroZap has kind of blown up a little bit. It's been a really wild ride. And yeah, RetroZap, I started last year, towards the end of the year, just kind of a place for me to write about the things I like. So that started out being a little bit of Star Wars, a little bit of other mediums as well, other TV, other films, music, everything. And it kind of sort of devolved down to mostly Star Wars with a little bit of thing, other stuff here and there. So you might get a little bit of Marvel. You might get a little bit of other ideas as well. But it's pretty much a Star Wars website. And from there, we've had a YouTube channel, The Collector's Hut, and also a podcast, Brews and Blasters, where my good friend Chris and I just basically talk about what we like in the Star Wars universe. It started in the local pub down the street, where we would just maybe once a month get a few drinks and just talk about what we like, what's new, what's not new. For instance, we just covered the Ewok Adventures. We did two commentaries on those movies. Totally not relevant to anything going on in the Star Wars universe now, but we had a good time, and we hope that you guys can come along with us and have a good time too.
Absolutely, Dan. It sounds like a show that we've heard of before, of sitting down with friends and enjoying it. Yeah, definitely.
You got it. It's very not dissimilar to sort of how we started our show. So that's really fun.
The similarities are not lost on me. I think the difference is what is in the cup.
I think you are correct.
And the results coming after thereafter, I suppose, maybe.
maybe.
No, it's all good. It's all good. And, like Dan said at the top of the show, I read your article about Luke's lightsaber on RetroZap.
Right.
And this weekend, and I was like, man, this is an incredible theory. I love it. I sent it to Dan. I kind of thought about it all weekend and stuff. And it just really, it was really powerful. I really, really enjoyed reading it. I loved the theory behind it. And I won't give away too much because I want folks to go out there and check it out. I'm sure we'll put a link in the show notes.
Absolutely.
But kudos to you, man. Awesome article. Loved it.
Thank you so much. I mean, I really can't take credit for the initial idea. That was all Steve Glosson. I was listening to one of his podcasts and I just heard about that and really thought I wanted to shed a little bit of light on it and maybe give attention to some of the nonprofits he was doing as well at the time. He was doing a fundraiser. So I really wanted to give that. But if you like that, I just published today an article about Wedge Antilles that might be a little bit controversial because
I saw that.
Yeah, I don't really, you know, I treat him very fairly. He was, I don't think he was the greatest guy to start out with. I'm gonna be honest.
Interesting.
That will certainly raise a few eyebrows. It'll be fun to see the reactions to that. And really, with both Brews and Blasters and Coffee with Kenobi, it's just all about that discussion and that engagement. And gentlemen, what an engaging episode we have here for Vision of Hope. It was one that when we'd found out that they were going to be delayed, I wasn't quite sure it was going to be on the Disney XD app so soon. Mm-hmm. But it was, thank goodness, and we've all dissected it. Let's start out with you, Joe. What is your overall opinion of Vision of Hope?
Yes, Vision of Hope. I liked this episode quite a bit, but I'm not going to say that it really, I don't think it twisted the plot enough. I kind of saw a lot of these things coming, and it was sort of a fulfillment of what I kind of saw, you know, a few months ago with what was happening with a few characters here and there. So I'm not going to give away too much now, but I kind of saw it all coming, and I just wish that it worked out a little better for them. I really wanted things to happen that didn't happen in this episode for our rebels because, man, they just need a helping hand sometimes.
Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I didn't think the twist was all awe-shocking. It didn't catch me off guard at all. But I enjoyed the episode overall because it was a nice little kind of rescue mission. The whole group was working together. They each had their skills at the top of their game there as far as it went. I enjoyed the interaction between the characters. It seemed like it was back to the good old times. But yet it kind of weaved in some of the different things we've seen all season. You know, them kind of getting to know each other as long as, you know, they've been working together. Also, you know, obviously Ezra's training coming up and the interactions there. But all in all, I think it was a lot of fun. And it did kind of promote the overall storyline as far as kind of what's going on maybe outside the Rebels themselves.
Interesting. Well, as per usual, we have three hosts tonight and three different opinions. I thought this was incredibly strong. I thought it was a very powerful episode, very poignant. I think there's much to learn. The more we learn about Ezra, it seems there's that much more to learn, not dissimilar to typical adolescence. And I'm just going to continue my soapbox of how Rebels is just one giant metaphor for adolescence. And this certainly is not any different. So when we start out, we've got this excellent scene where Ezra is training, and we've seen him training before, but this is different. It feels different. And I think the biggest way you notice that is that everybody is more serious. Chopper seems more focused. Sabine seems more focused. Zeb seems more focused. I mean, he's still got this amused look on his face. He's probably the least serious of all of them. But it's different. So Ezra can deflect, but he can't hit his target. And then,
you know,
when,
let me ask you.
Sure, go ahead.
Do you think those blasters are on stun?
They say that you're going to get stunned if you're not careful.
Oh, I totally missed that. Yes. Watched it two times.
Otherwise, we'd have a whole different conversation.
Right.
Child endangerment would definitely be a problem.
Yeah, they're going all out, right?
They are. They do say it's such a stun. And he says, you're not hitting your target. And Ezra, instead of getting discouraged or frustrated, he says, yet. The key word is yet. And then Kenan says, I have a feeling you're going to get stunned if you don't stay in the moment. This moment. Again, that emphasis on meditating, being calm, living in the moment. You know, very similar to Qui-Gon Jinn in episode one.
I like that.
Really embracing the living force right there.
Yeah. Well, also Kanan, too. I mean, as much as we see him in this beginning of this episode, he seems to have matured over since their last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously with Lando, and then, of course, what they had gone through in the temple and that whole experience. But, yeah, he's really trying to give some words of wisdom. It's nice to see the interaction of the other characters as well, kind of joining in on the kind of the fun and the training and stuff and showing that they kind of support him, you know, in this area.
Right.
I like that. I also like the obvious reminiscent of Luke training with the blast shield down on his helmet and you know, deflecting the blasts. But Luke wasn't really necessarily deflecting them as much as he was kind of absorbing them a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, that's more of a prequel thing.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun.
So then the key moment of this entire training sequence, Ezra has this vision. He sees Senator Travis being rescued, and he tells Ezra that his parents were very brave. And then something amazing happens. Ezra comes to, and we find out, he says, did I get stunned? And they say, no, actually, you deflected every single blast perfectly to the Stormtrooper helmet. And they show the helmet, it's turned upside down, it's charred, it's smoking. I thought that was an incredibly powerful scene. He wasn't in a force trance. He was perfectly connected with the Force.
Totally,
and this
true.
Is when he completely is able to deflect everything. What do you think about that, Joe?
Yeah, he was absolutely channeling the Force there. And did you notice the vision view that we kind of saw from Ezra's point of view was exactly the same as we saw from Anakin in episode 3?
Oh, when, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he picks up that that tablet thingy and he's like kind of seeing visions of Padme in the future, we're seeing that outline on the side of the screen the exact same way. I love that type of cohesion between the movies and the films and the television show.
Yeah.
Corey, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I love that callback to that as well. And I mean, it just shows me how much Ezra is strong in the Force. We don't realize his power. We saw it in an earlier episode with the Fear Nox and him calling on the kind of the darker side of the Force there, I think. But here we see that he has this power that maybe he doesn't know how to control, or obviously doesn't know how to control, mm-hmm. but you know, it's something that he's unaware of. And even Kanan, I think, is a little afraid of as well. And you mentioned earlier, Dan, that Kanan mentions this is this moment. And maybe he really buckled down and did focus on that moment, and boom, all of a sudden it came rushing in. So I mean, Kanan has some good words of advice.
Well, the thing that strikes me the most is that this was completely a subconscious thing. I mean, he goes into the trance mm-hmm. not because he's trying. He does center, but it's just like it's no different than breathing. You're not sitting here thinking, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. It's just a part of who you are. Ezra does this in an instant, and in that moment of sort of a semi-conscious state, he's able to do something that no human could possibly do, block laser bolts and hit them perfectly where they should go. I think there's a lot here about letting go of your conscious self, acting on instinct, and really trying to stay away from thinking. I can't help but bring up a sports metaphor.
Mm.
And I'm going to talk about the Chicago Bears. I know you're in the Massachusetts area. Hopefully there's still no bitterness from Super Bowl 20. You've had plenty of amazing years since then, that's for sure. Especially
I was thinking
year.
Jordan Bird myself.
Oh, that's great too. So I remember Gary Fensick. He was a safety for the Bears. And I remember him thinking, he said one time in an interview, I learned the plays right away so that I never have to think about them ever again. And they said, why? And he says, if you think you're dead, you got to react. You got to trust in who you are. I think this is another powerful moment of the learning comes early so that it becomes a part of who you are. This is a really stunning moment.
Right. I mean, you know, it kind of goes back to martial arts for me. I have about 31 years background with martial arts, and you have to learn. You're absolutely right about the learning first. You learn. So when you're in action, when you're in the moment, you're not thinking. There is no thinking. There's just doing. And I feel like that's somehow already been kind of described in the Star Wars universe, but he is perfectly channeling the Force because he's not even thinking about it. He is just letting it happen. He is in that moment perfectly in a way that he probably hasn't been yet. You know, he's kind of been edging towards that, but he totally fell into that, and he had that vision, and he was doing, he was just letting that kind of take control. And when you're practicing martial arts, you don't have time in those split second reactions to think about initiating a move or initiating any sort of attack or defense. You're letting your training take you forward, and you're letting your body and your hands and your feet know what to do because you've already trained for these situations in the past. So it's definitely, I see that sort of mind body metaphor really coming forward.
I was just about to ask you what kind of connections you see being as studied as you are in martial arts between that and being a Jedi, but I think you've pretty much nailed it before I could mm-hmm. even ask the question. It's like you're in the moment.
He saw it coming.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that reaction speed. You have to be there, and you have to have already, have to have a fundamental understanding of what it is. So you just open yourself to be able to react.
Perfect. Perfect. Corey, anything else on that, or shall we move on?
That's dead on.
It is dead on. You can't do much better than talking to a master about a Jedi master. So.
There you go.
Well done, Joe.
Far from it.
That's pretty cool. So then we find out what's really going on here. Ezra is extremely excited to hear from the senator, Senator Travis. And by the way, his first name, we'll get to that at the end of the conversation, but I think that's rather telling. Senator Travis has a message. He says, he mentions a word, and that's the name of the planet that he's going to visit next. That's pretty much what's going on here. And they're looking for signs of where he's going to appear. He gives clues that only the locals will know, but goes right over the Empire's head. And that's something that Hera says based on her contact with Fulcrum, who we still don't know much about, except that Fulcrum is helping the rebels along. So this is an exciting moment because we're starting to see, we've seen Senator Travis a few times before. And the first time we saw him was in the Rise of the Old Masters, when we first met the Inquisitor. And what is your overall opinion, gentlemen, of Senator Travis, just based on the first 5 minutes of this show and everything we've seen so far?
Well, I'm wondering why Bail Organa didn't know about Travis. Maybe they're disparate, maybe they're kind of acting in their own ways, but it kind of always struck me as odd that going back to Rise of the Old Masters, you have this senator in exile who was trying to rise up, but the Empire had no way to block him from jamming their transmissions. And it really, it was very, very interesting. I was really wondering where the show was going to develop that.
I called him Travis, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Travis or Travis?
I thought it was Travis.
I'm not sure.
It probably is Travis. Maybe I'm thinking of an episode of The Dukes of Hazzard.
I have a Boston accent. You can't go by me.
I think Travis sounds much more Star Wars.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's a very good
song. Well, I think it's kind of however you kind of perceive it, I think, maybe. I don't know. It's like saying the planet's name of Lothal. It seems to be right. Wherever you're located. So.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's what Ezra told us.
That's right.
Right? So that's cool. So I always, the Senator Travis always struck me as a very unique character. He seems like he's got quite a network. He's able to break into the Imperial signal on the holonet. Mm-hmm. And in The Rise of the Old Masters, he said, you need to rescue Luminara Unduli. And that was a trap, right? So
yeah, not the best intel.
No, it wasn't the best. So it makes you think that even he's not, infallible. But that's still very odd that sort of handed things to the rebels that way. So it's kind of in the back of your mind. So now they start to realize, look, this might be a trap because the Empire could break this code too. Ezra has a different approach. Kanan tells him not to be too quick to trust his vision, which is very reminiscent of The Empire Strikes Back mm-hmm. and Yoda telling Luke not to run off to Cloud City. But Ezra says he's never been stronger about anything in his life. He's never felt stronger about anything in his life. So we're on the move, right? Before we move on to that, what do you think about this notion of trusting in your visions, Corey? Why don't we start with you?
Yeah, you made a good point where he is reminiscent of Luke, dashing off and going to save his friends, and even further on in this episode, I kind of had that same feeling of Cloud City's kind of chase scenes and whatnot, had that vibe to it. But yeah, him trusting this vision and putting all his chips in that. It's just because, is it because it's new to him? Is it something that's, he never felt like that before. So is this something that's just feels so powerful and so good to him? And as we see, obviously further on that it's different, but yeah, I think he's still young. He's still learning his way around the Force and how to manipulate that a little bit and how to read the things correctly. So, and the thing is, like, that I thought was interesting too, that Kanan's kind of like, oh, okay, let's go with that. If Ezra thinks it's good to go and he's trusting his instincts, so we'll just go with that. I mean, I thought it was interesting that Kanan was kind of on board with that.
Yeah.
He does seem a little reluctant, though. He says, mm-hmm. you better be cautious, dude.
Yeah, totally. You think of Luke ran off and that didn't work well for anybody.
No.
And Anakin had a vision. And that really didn't work out for anybody.
No. In fact, I'm almost surprised that Ezra didn't lose a hand. The other two lost hands after their visions.
That's a good point. So you think about visions and Star Wars. I mean, trusting in your vision and trusting in the Force seem to be two very different things. And I think the whole idea is that you have to understand what you're putting into the vision as much as what you're getting out of the vision. And that's, I think that's something that Ezra needs to learn in this episode, and something that Kanan seems to have already been warned against in his Padawan training.
True. An excellent point that they certainly go back to towards the end. So then we have a moment that, of course, I loved. And you know why I'm saying this, of course.
Yes.
Ezra has to go talk to his connection, whose name is, what is it?
Zer.
Zer, yeah. His name is Zer.
It's a good name, yeah. Strong, name. Powerful, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It brings a tear to my eye. So we find out that Zer has Class 3 clearance and he's been promoted. And a lot of that kind of ties into the novels by Jason Fry too, which is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The young adult novels. And he tells Ezra that Callus seems to be setting a trap. And so then Ezra says, all right. And he says, look, I need to tell you something. I need to tell you my real name. He doesn't get a chance to do that because stormtroopers mm-hmm. approach as per Ezra's vision. And he gets away with the help of Zer. Before we move on, I think this seemingly insignificant scene, there's a lot of power to it, especially when it shows the bond between Zer and Ezra. What did you guys think about that moment?
I was glad to see Zer back. And I knew that was going to be his contact. And it's cool because it's like he can get on the same level with him. And they kind of have this instant connection like they had before, friendship. And I was like, oh, this is really great for him to be able to sit, you know, down with somebody that's not someone on the Ghost or someone that's older than him that can't relate to maybe his age group problems or issues and whatnot. And obviously, they're both working to the same means there. And as a nice connection, I think it was nice to see what he's been doing since that we last left him. And it's kind of bittersweet a little bit, I think. It's ripped away a little bit early. But we do get to see Zer. At first, I thought he was going to take out that stormtrooper at the end there. So
it's weird because I haven't read the novels yet.
Part one is the only one. I'm sorry. Part one's the only one that's out so far. The new one comes out, I believe, in March.
Okay, understood. The last time we saw Zer was with the Inquisitor, and now he's being moved up the ladder. Mm-hmm. And that just seems to make me wonder where he's coming from. And, you know, maybe he likes Ezra or, you know, but where will his loyalties lie in the end?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I thought that too. It's almost like they're building trust here with the audience. And they don't give it away too much. I mean, we just see Zer help out the entire time. He doesn't seem to be fluctuating too much, but they're building that up. And much as we've seen backstabbing in this episode, I wonder if it'd be a future problem.
I don't see it that way, and not because of my insanely inherent bias. I really think that what we see here is a moment of real intimacy between two friends. The act of naming is so powerful, and if you have any doubt as to that, think about having a child, right?
That's
when
true.
You name that child, it's a sense of ownership, it's a sense of intimacy, it's a sense of belonging. Ezra's about to tell him his real name. A seemingly innocuous act signifies a much higher level of camaraderie, of relationship. There's real trust there for someone who is pretty much not in any friends until he met the crew of the Ghost. So I think this is not only the last we're going to see of Zer, but he's going to play a bigger role. And if it is, in fact, he turns out to be a traitor, which I have a really hard time believing, that is going to be quite soul-crushing, I think.
Well, another thing to think about, too, as he got a chance to reveal his name, and he didn't say it, but he gets interrupted with the stormtroopers, you know, as a writer, I think about that, and I think, okay, that's a cliffhanger, and that's also, you know, foreshadowing, in a sense, because they could have done it. They could have easily said his name any time along the way, and, you know, that fact they had to cut it off just like that, It's telling, I think, a little bit. So I think we'll come back to this in a later episode.
Yeah, Ezra's name is a big MacGuffin for the Empire at this point.
Right,
that's right.
They're looking for his name. Zer doesn't know his name. The Callus doesn't know his name. Inquisitor is still trying to learn the landscape as well. So it seems like a very important piece of information that gets chased down in this episode.
And speaking of chase down, before we move on from the scene, I want to point out something that I was speaking with Tom Gross earlier today. And he said, is Kanan's weapon using stun or kill when he's shooting those stormtroopers? He shoots at two of them. He shoots at more than that, but he hits two of them, boom, boom, right away, and they drop. And they kind of held on that scene for a little while. And I looked and looked and looked to see, but there was no movement. It's really impossible to tell from that scene if it was stun or a kill. But the blast seemed to be a kill shot.
Here's why I kind of made the connection was in the beginning of this episode where they had the training sequence. Chopper was shooting out a little blast of little shocking or whatever, something like that. And it seemed like it'd be similar to what Ezra shoots out of his blaster.
Oh, you thought it was a similar?
Something like that, like a stun blast or something of that nature.
I think he's shooting to kill.
I do too.
I look back to Spark of Rebellion, and there seemed to be no shame in killing stormtroopers in that. No.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's war. I mean, they were trying to kill him.
Stakes are real, for sure.
Yeah.
It is real. And speaking of real, we get this very brief moment where we get to see Callus in his quarters. You gotta love the voice of David Aiello.
Yes, loved it.
But we learned something very interesting that you don't typically see in The Empire, where someone doesn't end up on the floor courtesy of Darth Vader. We see dissension between Callus and the Inquisitor, which I thought was fascinating. And the thing that happened there is Callus says he believes there's been too much attention placed on his Jedi, the Inquisitor being the his in this sentence. And he says, catch my rebels and we'll catch his Jedi. Again, with the poignancy of the pronoun and the fact that there's going to be some drama between these two.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be internal strife between the Inquisitor and Callus, maybe just trying to earn their own place in the Empire. But there definitely seems to be something to look forward to later on in the season.
Yeah, I liked this little twist in their relationship because it shows that Callus isn't necessarily all behind the Inquisitor's plans and whatnot. So it seems, maybe we'll see some of them butting heads maybe down the road. I'd like to see obviously the rankings are different, but definitely something that's, it's nice to see Agent Callus back as well. I mean, we've missed him for a few episodes, and he gets to kind of chase him down, and it leads me to kind of think, like, where's Inquisitor? So, I don't know, it's either Inquisitor's chasing him down or Callus chasing him down. It's kind of a loop, but I don't know.
It is. And so then we transition. We found out that Ezra, we already knew this, but is reinforced. He survived alone against the Empire for 8 years. And then we get into the meat of the action of this episode. Chopper takes out this droid. I got to be honest. I mean, I know that Chopper, everyone is suddenly anointed as the greatest thing since the lightsaber was invented. And I've always enjoyed Chopper. But when I saw this, oh, yeah, man, I am on board. He shocks this other droid.
Yeah.
He shoots it down a shaft, and then he starts flexing his muscles. I mean, who cannot love that?
He's the best. I mean, what are you going to say against Chopper? What will you dare to say against Chopper? You might come out.
Yeah, right.
He was fantastic. I'm 1,000% on Team Chopper now, for sure.
Time for that tattoo.
So they have to climb down into the sewer, which I think is a very lovely symbol, because they're getting down into the dirtiness of what this war is like. And there's a smell, and the smell ends up being Travis. It's interesting, right? And as they're going down, they're discussing the smell, and then we have a quick moment of Sabine saying something about Ezra's smell, and Ezra's like, wait, you know what I smell like? Again, teasing us with that fun little stuff. And then Kanan does something fun. He does an Obi-Wan trick with the droids, like in A New Hope on the Death Star.
Did you notice those droids were the McQuarrie prototype?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a different paint job.
Mm, extremely cool. They're certainly using the McQuarrie sketchbook in all its glory, and the results have been fantastic.
Love it.
So again, we find out it's a trap. And I think there were some interesting things here. For one, Callus doesn't recognize Hera. He says, oh, a Twi'lek. And based on your appearance, you are a pilot. And we get this incredible action sequence. And then both lightsabers ignited, Jedi deflecting bolts, and the team works together beautifully. Any thoughts on any of those sequences, guys?
I thought it was interesting that he only had droids, Senator Travis, kind of protecting him, or his entourage, or whatever you want to call it. And he seemed to be he was just waiting in this moment too. Same with the little hologram that you saw earlier. It was, it seemed like this was kind of a telling of what his motives were. You know, he just seemed like he was just waiting, like, out the plan. I kind of had this feeling of like, oh, what's, you know, he seems very, like, he's like just waiting in place. You know, it seemed like, you know, obviously the story goes on, but yeah, for this scene in general, I think he kind of crouches back and is scared. And if he's a freedom fighter, I think he would take kind of some control. And so it's, again, a telling move on his part of who he really is.
Yeah, he was much too cool and much too collected when he was up top, so to speak. And then when the fight goes down to the sewers, he just kind of buckled. And yeah, you just tell there was really something quite off with this character. And Hera definitely notices it right from Jump Street. You see her face as soon as he gets winded, and she's on to him.
And I love, she has shown two episodes in a row what we know she is capable of, and just the way that she lets things play out, and she's always in control, even when she's not in control. That is, yet again, true leadership. It's fantastic.
She's throwing punches too. Yeah, definitely.
Totally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I love the sequence too, real quickly, when Ezra is looking at Sabine and she says, yeah, think of something clever to say later. I got to move on. And so do we, because I know that Joe's in a hurry.
I wish I wasn't.
Oh, I know. We did too. But hey, man, you're a man of many talents and many hats, and we understand. So we find out again Travis is a traitor, and he says something interesting. He says, I've not heard of anyone speaking out against the Empire since the Bridger transmissions. And then he sort of says, the original voices of freedom. So we learn again more about Ezra's pedigree. Not only is he force sensitive, but his parents were freedom fighters.
I'd love the podcast feed for the Bridger transmissions. That's my channel, and have a listen.
They're good. They're the original voices of freedom, Joe.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. So, as you mentioned, Corey, Hera sees through it all along. Travis says that Ezra's parents are gone, but I have a hard time believing that. And so does Hera. And she basically takes it to another level, as she does. Says they're never gone as long as we continue to fight. So she tricks Travis by giving him a gun, which I think everyone who's watching you didn't have, wasn't armed.
Mm-hmm.
Punches him out. Boom, one shot. Muhammad Ali would be so proud. and then we move on to the escape, where Kanan has to struggle to stop the fan, but he's successful. Before we move on, I want to hit on that briefly. Did you guys notice anything about maybe what might be symbolized here?
No.
Well, everything the time we've seen Kanan use the Force... for a telekinesis standpoint, I guess, poorly worded, I apologize. But he struggles, but he makes it happen. This is like something that can cut you apart, so he has to be very cautious in the moment of battle. And when he does this, he basically has to cut out like the bad parts of his life and just focus on the moment to save his friends, not unlike what he has to do when he has to forget about Order 66 and try to move on and be the Jedi that he's supposed to be. I think that was a nice little moment. And then speaking of nice moments, how about that look that Ezra gives the senator when he's walking out?
Mm, yeah.
It was the opposite of a nice moment, man. That,
yes, that scary.
That was a scary, scary look. And I'm wondering what's going to happen when these two tangle again?
Mm-hmm. It's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, if this show was on HBO, I don't think Travis would last beyond that scene.
Yeah,
but you know, I definitely think there will be a round two with Gaul Travis, and we're gonna have to see what happens because Ezra might be tempted to do things that may not be the Jedi way.
I think that's gonna be something that while he's learned so much since his encounters in the temple in Lothal and Yoda and just his journey. There's still a lot that he has to go. When you think about it too, as you're growing up, you learn lessons and you take a few steps back. Then you take a few leaps forward and you take a few steps back. It's really, you never really stop learning and growing until you die anyway. And it's going to be magnified through Ezra because of everything that he has to go through. So at the end, he asks Kanan about the visions and, you know, can I trust these visions? And Kanan explains very clearly, look, it takes training and vision to see things clearly through your visions. And then Kanan says something funny, which again separates them from Anakin and Obi-Wan. He says, my last vision, which Ezra asks him about, he says, what? Do you guys remember what he said?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. What was the word he says? cocky kid or a
bratty, bratty kid. I saw this bratty kid that was always getting him into trouble, and Ezra doesn't take offense at all. He just basically says, I guess you read that one wrong. And Kanan smiles and says, yeah, I guess I did. Wonderful moment between these two. Again, we talked about this before, but their connection and their chemistry and the way that they love and forgive, they are just going to be so much more successful, you would think, than Obi-Wan and Anakin. It's hard to say, but I just love the interactions between these two. I hope they do a novel with just these two in it, because they're just incredible together. And I think a lot of that is the performances of Freddie Prinze Jr. and Taylor Gray as well.
Amazing performance, really. I think this episode really stood out. And I just think the Rebels, you really see them as a cohesive unit this episode. There is no strife in the ranks. They've really come together to fight this outside antagonistic force. And even I think for the first time in the entire series, Hera says, let's go Rebels. I mean, they are defined, they are identified, they are together as a family like you've never seen them before, from beginning of the episode right to the end.
Perfect. Well, guys, this has been so exciting to talk about. I love this episode. Before we give our overall grade, any last-minute thoughts or reflections from either of you two gentlemen?
Yeah, you had a good point there, Joe, about them working cohesively as a unit. And, you know, it seems like whatever they have a task before them or a mission before them to carry out, they seem to really work, you know, just, you know, perfectly together. And even if they're separated, it seems like they work it out or they come together in a plan and it works. Yeah, again, this is a fun episode. I thought it told a lot of things. It was great to see some returning characters again and kind of see what they've been up to. All in all, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great things to take out of this. Did you catch the mural that was in the old Senate chamber?
No.
I was trying to check it out. There wasn't a lot to really decipher, but I saw sail barges. I saw Ithorians. It was it was really, really fascinating. Wow. I hope we get a better look at it. Steve Bloom, oh my gosh.
Yes. yeah.
I mean, everyone knows he's amazing, but you know what? It just hearing him roar when the fight starts and hearing him laugh when Sabine's explosion goes off after he grabs her and saves her from that explosion.
That was cool.
That was an awesome move, yeah.
It's that type of acting that really just makes those great moments happen. I love the continuity between the episodes, seeing Zare come back, seeing Gal Travis come back, and really developing these characters in a way that you never saw with the Clone Wars. Just really makes such a cohesive narrative, and I really, really love that.
You mentioned his first name. Could you repeat his first name again?
Gal.
Yeah. How allegorical is that? He's got some Gal betraying the good guys.
Sure does. Yeah, and I think one final thing. You know, Travis has figured out who Ezra is. That MacGuffin is.
That's right.
He's captured. So now, if you know Travis knows, then the Empire will surely know. And what implications that will have, we are we're gonna have to find out.
That's right. Well, that's and to be honest, at the very end, after Ezra gives that look, and you know that he and Kallus have a conversation, he kind of looks disjointed a little. You can't help but wonder. Just he does know, and Joe, you're 1,000% right. He does know who Ezra is. Is he going to let that information out? Is he going to hold on to that information? Will he be a double agent? Who knows? This is going to be more fun to play out, but he seems to be a little more complex just at that very end than maybe we might have originally thought. And it might just be gifted animation that's not connected, but I find that hard to believe. I mean, again, they know what they're doing. Dave and crew know what they're doing. So very intriguing. The only other thing I want to point out, my last minute thoughts on this is at the end, Ezra's like, yeah, what's wrong with this? And Hera says, we have hope that things can get better. The notion of hope, clearly we understand how powerful the word hope is in Star Wars as well as life in general. It just ends on a very strong note. And it's not often that we get to see Hera and Ezra together sharing a moment like that, which I thought was great. So guys, we're at the end. Overall grade for this episode. And when you give your grade, if you would, let me know if through the course of this discussion your grade has changed in any way. And Joe, you're our special guest. Why don't we start with you?
I'm going to give this episode A-. I think it was an exceptionally strong episode. We're furthering the entire plot of the Rebels forward, and I always love that. Definitely not a throwaway episode, quote unquote, in any means. I think the character development was really strong. The acting was really strong. The animation was really fantastic. I think they're forwarding the animation just as much with every episode as they are with the story. So the only thing I would love to see more, I don't know, maybe you know what? I'm going to change it right now. Change it right in the middle of the review. Solid A.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I would. There's nothing I would like to see more. It was a great episode.
Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Beginning with us talking about this and kind of going through the discussion points here, I was kind of centered on a B because I mean it was a good episode. I'm sorry, a B plus. It was a good episode, but I wanted something more. Was missing something. I felt like. Sabine didn't get a whole lot of screen time as far as kind of doing a whole lot, but Hera did. So I thought it was a nice change other than Kanan and Ezra. You know, it was nice to see some of the returning characters. Zare was cool to see where he's going. And it did throw a wrench in everything. And now we've talked about this. It makes you think about, what implications are going forward. They've set the groundwork now. And now we're good to see it play out, hopefully through the rest of the season. So I'm going to change my grade to an A-. Yeah, it's just through this discussion, I think it's so much fun to get different perspectives on different scenes and different characters and how they interacted. And so it was a lot of fun.
I agree. My grade hasn't changed. I was wondering if I was going to raise it at all, but I'm pretty set on an A. I think it's a wonderful episode. I think there are a lot of key moments that are very subtle and quiet, but they speak volumes about character. This show, again and again and again, impresses me with the metaphor and the symbolism and where they're taking these characters through their respective journeys. And I agree with you. It would be so nice to see some more from Sabine. And mm-hmm. I just believe it's going to happen sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll wait and see. But overall, an incredibly engaging, entertaining episode. With a lot of heart.
At this point, I just want a Sabine miniseries playing in the off, while the rest of the series is down, and I want my action figure to go right along with it.
Well, Joe, it's been such a pleasure having you on. Let's get right into our five questions. We'll start with, what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Today, it's Revenge of the Sith, but it changes pretty much every day. So you're going to have to catch me. Maybe next week it might be Empire.
What was it yesterday?
Yesterday it was still Sith.
Kind of Sithy kind of week, huh?
So you're excited about Celebration and seeing it in 3D.
Oh, I wish I was going. It seems like it's going to be really amazing. Maybe one day we'll get a widescreen release, right?
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
I hope so. Fingers crossed.
So, Joe, your favorite Star Wars character?
My favorite Star Wars character? Probably Obi-Wan Kenobi. But, again, that seems to shift every once in a while. I like the good guys. I like Luke Skywalker. I love Kenobi. I'm gonna go with Kenobi.
Well, you certainly won't hear any complaints from us on
no.
that. So what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Never tell me the odds. I have to go with that. But you know something? This is kind of a weird one that I love. And it's from the original Star Wars, and it's Biggs. And I just love the cadence of the way he says this. It has literally no meaning. It's kind of just a throwaway piece of dialogue. They're in the dogfight, and he's looking around, and he goes, "I can't see him." And I love that part every single time. It has such action and such momentum to it, and it kind of furthers the entire dogfight.
That's excellent. I like that. So if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Oh, I collect, but I'm not, like my friend Chris has an amazing collection. He's posting videos on my site and, he's a collector. I'm kind of just a guy who has always just grown up with Star Wars and has, some action figures and has a few things here and there. What do I have? I'm looking around right now. I'm looking around my room. I just got a copy of Splinter of the Mind's Eye, the first edition. That's pretty amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. One of my favorite things I have goes back to when I was a kid. and it's the ceramic Darth Vader lamp. And it's totally fan-made. It was probably bought out of a ceramic shop where someone painted. And it was given to me by an aunt way back in the day. And I didn't even know I had this until maybe I was around 10. It was given to me when I was a little kid, and it kind of just got put away. And we found it kind of rummaging through the cellar one day, and we brought it upstairs. And it's been, a room of mine ever since. You know, it was in my bedroom when I was a teenager and in college. And, you know, then when I got married, it made its way over. It's in a back room now. But I love it. It warms up, and it has these old incandescent lights that kind of flicker in the background. And it's pretty cool.
It sounds cool. We'd love to see a picture of that if you could send us a tweet or put it on our Facebook page.
Oh, totally.
That'd be awesome. Those are the things I'm sure you've heard Steve Sansweet say numerous times. How much he enjoys the fan-made, authentic, one-of-a-kind items. Those are priceless, really.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's one-of-a-kind. I did an eBay search a few years back, and I guess there was a limited run of them. You can kind of find them here and there, but definitely not licensed, for sure.
Sure.
And definitely pretty cool.
So, Joe, what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Oh, what speaks to me? When I was a kid, the entire idea of that good versus evil and having that hope to prevail really stood out. And as I got older, the idea of the Force really, really resonated with me in a way that I couldn't really describe with, you know, many, many other philosophies that I was learning as I was growing up. It just seemed like the Force was something pure. Like a pure philosophy in a lot of ways, seeing as it's kind of an amalgamation of every other philosophy out there. It seems maybe that purity right there. But yeah, these days, what resonates with me is so much. I think that what really resonates with me is the sense of community, maybe I could say, or the sense of knowing who you are and where you're and what you love. I think that's really kind of what Star Wars means to me right now.
Certainly. I think that's a good answer. I mean, it means something to everybody differently, and it's the best way basically you feel about it. So that's great. So where can fans get a hold of you or get in touch with you if they want to have a question or just want to say hello?
Sure, yeah. I'm writing on RetroZap.com, and you can find me over there pretty much every day. You can find me on Twitter at Joey Wan Kenobi or at RetroZapped. And I'm doing a podcast weekly, Brews and Blasters, which is out there as well.
Fantastic. And these are all amazing things. And we talked about this at the top of the show, but your blog is just blowing up. The quality writing that you're producing and the number of topics you're analyzing and dissecting are just great fodder for discussion, which, of course, we love at Coffee with Kenobi. So, Joe, thank you so much for being here on Rebels Reactions, and we look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Thank you so much.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torok.
This is Spectre 1. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.